This week on Far From Ideal, we're talking about Malcolm in the Middle.
Classic sitcom, right?
Oh, classic and also a defining sitcom. Like, it changed so many things about how sitcoms were made.
Sure, okay.
that's the pitch.
Got it, and they're bringing it back as well. I didn't realise, I've actually just seen that the subtitle for the new series is Life's Still Unfair.
I mean, that doesn't fill me with confidence. Do you know how many of them are coming back for the new one?
So we've got Frankie Muniz back as Malcolm. We've got Jane
Kaczmarek. Yeah.
As Lois, Bryan Cranston as Hal, Christopher Masterson as Francis, Justin Barfield as Reese. We've got a new guy replacing Dewey.
Oh, interesting.
I did know about that because Eric Per Sullivan
doesn't act.
I think he went to university and had a normal life.
Yeah.
So you've got Caleb Ellsworth Clark as Dewey. So they have two more children at this point.
Right, because they had Jamie even in the old one.
Then they have a youngest child who identifies as non-binary and is the child that Lois was pregnant with at the finale.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yes,
okay. Okay.
Yeah. I did actually see something about Francis's wife, Piama, being back as well.
She was brilliant.
I can't see that in the... Yeah, she was great. I liked
her.
She
was so good.
Yeah, so a lot of the central cast is back.
And even they did things in between. Like, remember there was that Bryan Cranston...
Yes.
Jane
Him
Kaczmarek
waking up
thing.
From a dream.
Yeah, from Breaking Bad.
Yeah, with Breaking Bad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which was brilliant because I remember seeing that just on YouTube. And then ages later, seeing the behind the scenes, and he had kind of orchestrated that himself.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
Which is brilliant.
Yeah. It also sounds like he's the one out of the bunch of them that kept very good contact.
With everyone else.
Yeah. Mm. So, I mean, I was listening to a Frankie Muniz interview where he was talking about having basically not seen the majority of the cast since they finished filming in 2006.
Wow.
Until walking back onto set again, other than Bryan Cranston.
The more I learn about Bryan Cranston, there's just nothing not to like.
Yeah, seems like a good guy.
Long may that be the case.
Well, yeah. No allegations as of the time of recording.
So I've watched it growing up, like Saturday morning vibe. And then when
Saturday
I was...
Morning.
Well, it was that kind of all after school or whatever it was.
I remember it being like in tandem with The Simpsons. So
right,
like
you went on a different channel. And then you went back to The Simpsons,
I mean, I think on Sky One at one point, it was Malcolm in the Middle, followed by The Simpsons.
We didn't have Sky, like Rishi Sunak, just sad, underprivileged life.
Yeah. Among the bourgeoisie, we watched Malcolm in the Middle and The Simpsons as a back-to-back double feature.
It's interesting that it was with The Simpsons because there is a similarity of trying to make ends meet.
Way more so than The Simpsons. Yeah. Because you do look back at The Simpsons and it's a single income household.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It's someone that didn't go to university.
Yeah.
It's they live a life of relative.
Plant.
Yeah, exactly.
Lisa has a saxophone. Yeah.
Exactly. Life of relative comfort and ease.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's a different time, right?
That's true. Yeah. So I just watched it when it was on TV and then. When I was living in France, I rewatched it, all of the episodes, and it felt very different watching it like that because before that, you kind of have different alliances, like there are different characters that you kind of relate to more.
Sure.
But on a rewatch, it was the first time that I saw just how badly Dewey is treated from the beginning and how much he tries to change it throughout. And it's only when they have Jamie as the brother that is younger than Dewey that actually does change. And Dewey kind of became a really key character. And it's there's some weird irony that he's the one that's like, fuck this, and doesn't want to come back.
Yeah.
I recently started watching it again and it's weirdly progressive for the time.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of ableism or race or sexuality even. Like there are a lot of jokes in it where...
Class as well, right?
Class as well is kind of at the core, yeah.
Yeah.
There are moments where... In another show of the same time, a joke about a character being gay would have made the gay character the butt of the joke.
Right.
In Malcolm in the Middle, it never is. That's never where the joke goes.
The bigot is the butt of the joke, yeah.
Or the audience as the one that expects that to happen, you know?
Sure.
But yeah, in terms of how it changed, like first sitcom, not having a laughter track, the breaking the fourth wall, Malcolm speaking to the camera.
Sure, yeah, of course, huge. Yeah. Which, did Scrubs do that as well?
Scrubs was voiceover.
Voiceover, yes, yeah, yeah.
And it had a lot of the, yeah, it had those.
The fourth wall was loose. Yeah,
it was. It was, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And even the editing style, like it wasn't a multicam. It was a single camera cinematic sitcom, yeah, setup with this fast pan between scenes with that sound effect. They're like, shh.
Wait, so is this the first example of a sitcom doing that?
Yeah.
Like a single camera setup?
Oh, I'm not sure if it was the first single camera, but I would be surprised if there was another one. I can't think of another one that came before that.
Well, single camera without laugh track.
Yeah, for a sitcom specifically.
Yeah, yeah. This is so narrow it.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you've had, but you have had single cameras for a little while longer, but yeah.
But not without the laughter track.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, Malcolm in the Middle, very early. Because, yeah, so then, I mean, you see this, yeah, it's a weird inflection point time-wise where you've got The Office is a few years later,
mm-hmm,
right, across the pond, yeah, right? And then there's a spiral out into, I mean, they still make three camera setups with a laugh track or with an audience, but yeah, it's not the norm anymore, is it? It's flipped now.
There's just very distinct styles now, right? You might still get, if it's a family sitcom, mostly in one set, it's probably going to be laughter track and multicam.
Mm.
And if it's a bit more roaming, then they'll go single cam and maybe without the laughter track. It always used to confuse me though, watching shows where they'd go outside and there was a laughter track. Like when I was a kid, I couldn't understand where the audience was.
Yeah. 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 Well, cause so when people do the going on holiday kind of episode, Only Fools and Horses would do it sometimes, yeah, where they would go on holiday, but there's still a laughter track in it. It does feel jarring.
Weird. Yeah.
Because we're not watching a play anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like when you're seeing a three dimensional world and perspective, and there's also this, it's like having a narrator, right? It's like a narrator who's telling you when to laugh.
Yeah.
Oh, you agree, do you? Ogle agrees.
I really hope that mic picked that up.
Yeah. In terms of Malcolm as a an era-changing sitcom, like, mm-hmm, what else did it do different? I mean, so definitely big thing is the class thing.
The real struggle of being poor and trying to make ends meet.
Well, and to like you say, with the, now I'm thinking about it, with the butt of the joke being on the audience or the butt of the joke being not on the poor person.
Yeah.
It's the real struggles I mean, that's where good comedy comes from very often, isn't it? It's like situations that you can directly map onto your own life or you can see in the real world, that humor of recognition.
Mm-hmm.
It's very bleak sitcom at times. It's one of those things where you strip away the layers of humor. And it's quite savage. Sad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You're right about where the joke is on like who is it that we're laughing at. And I think it does a really good job of explaining, like there's an episode where you can see all of the things that are being set up. You don't know where it's going, but it's like Dewey is pouring juice on the floor and washing up liquid gets spilt and Hal is trying to get the record player. So there's a long cable across the kitchen and you're like, you know what's coming. But then it won't go there, it will be something else. Or it will just do the thing that you think it's going to do and then it doesn't. Even with Lois as, like, I remember watching it as a child and thinking, because we were the same age as Malcolm, because it was like 2001, 2000 that it started.
We would have been around the same.
Like 10
I mean,
or 11.
Is Frankie Muniz now? Frankie Muniz is 39, so a couple of years younger.
Yeah.
But yeah, around that sort of age, yeah.
And, well, he might have been playing a bit younger.
Yeah, and also we may have been seeing
like 2 years
repeats
later.
of it. Yeah, from a few years later. Yeah, yeah, because it wasn't necessarily playing straight away in the UK.
For sure, for sure. But yeah, having Lois as this villain, watching it as a child, and now watching it and just being like this poor woman who's like, trying to manage these
beset upon woman
mad house. Yeah, and especially when you see because Bryan Cranston as well. He's such a phenomenal actor because he really sells everything. Like Lois is really good. Like she kind of has one note. She doesn't have one note. That's not fair. she does that angry mom brilliantly. And then there are moments where she does other things and they're also good. Bryan Cranston, it doesn't matter what he is doing, he's in it 150%. Even if it's Craig's fantasy of him about Lois, but Hal is like forlorn in the background. And like, you're right about the moments being sad, because it also touches on some quite deep themes apart from just the setup, like the fact that Hal's family all hate Lois.
That was initially where I went to in my head about other things that she gets to do.
Yeah, no, it was unfair of me to say that it's one note, because she also...
No, but you remember that note.
Yeah, because it's...
You know, there's lots of notes that she plays, but you remember that note because that was her iconic characterization, right? And that's what she did most of, probably.
Yeah, and even when she's again, not...
it's what she did most of, because that's what we're seeing through the Malcolm lens most of the time, right? We're seeing that through the children's lens. Mm-hmm. Rather than, you know, those moments which break the day-to-day up a bit more, right? So they go to Hal's family. That is a more unusual situation where they do see the cracks in their mother.
I think the breaking it up happens a lot more often than just when they do something different, like going to a funeral or going to a wedding or going on holiday. It's in the moments where you see just Hal and Lois together. Like, there's one episode where he gets really sad because... he discovers for the first time that she doesn't believe in heaven. And the entire episode is about them trying to reconcile that. Or even the one where she realizes that he loves her more than she loves him. And she's devastated. Mm. And it takes until the end of the episode for him to be like, yeah, obviously, otherwise we'd never leave the bedroom. Which is brilliant. Like, they are so layered. Even the pilot, like rewatching the pilot. I would say anyone who's ever watched it, even if you haven't watched it, rewatch the pilot, because... the writing is so good from the get-go. Just the setup, not just the dialogue, but the fact that the kids are having breakfast before school and Hal is stood there with a broadsheet newspaper open and Lois is shaving his entire body while the kids are eating breakfast. Just that alone is so funny.
Mm. We talk about like one-note characters, which none of them are.
Yeah.
In comparison to The Simpsons, The Simpsons is a cartoon and operates on a different kind of logic. But, you know, in those early days of The Simpsons, maybe two notes per character. And that's all you need for that kind of setup. And very often that's all you need for a sitcom as well, right? Like, you look at a multi-camera sitcom, like Big Bang Theory comes to mind, right? And it's like...
pretty one-dimensional.
Maybe two or three jokes over and over again per character in different combinations and different loops.
Yeah.
Right. We just have certain quirks and characteristics that we just cycle through.
Mm-hmm.
There is something brave about, you know, at the time of Malcolm in the Middle coming out, doing something which feels a bit more real, because there's the potential that it's not got the same laughs per minute, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You're doing something which is quite... quite risky.
Risky and with so much payoff.
Yeah, so much payoff, and it's become formalized.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So you've got this new... I haven't seen much of it yet. I've seen beats of it, but The Paper, The Office spin-off?
No, I don't know.
The logical extension of an entire era of sitcom making, where you've got The Office, you've got Parks and Recreation, you've got Modern Family, all been very successful for a very, very long time, and... a lot of them had speed bumps in the early days of figuring out some of the characterizations, but also figuring out the tone and figuring out how you make that kind of show effectively.
Because the characters do develop in Malcolm in the Middle, you know, Francis eventually gets out of military school, like has a very different life.
He goes,
it's that kind of thing. It's like
so
completely
many.
Different. Yeah. And even the fact that...
and he becomes his dad.
He becomes his dad, but even like...
yeah.
marrying his mom, and then there's that whole issue with that, and then the fact that even a character like Reese, who was probably the easiest to make a single note character out of like the bully, who's like kind of dumb, he finds his own way as well, like the first episode where he cooks dinner. And it's like, that again, it could have just been, that's the joke, is that he manages to pull off this huge dinner and burns his hands and all the rest of it, all of these amazing gags. But then that leads Tim to then being interested in cooking in the same way that Dewey with the piano. There's an episode where he, before he kind of gets really into it, where he stuff just keeps going missing throughout the throughout the episode. And it's because Dewey's taking all this spoons and things to build an entire piano that works in the garage.
I'm trying to think of a sitcom before that, which centered children in that way, because obviously you've got animated sitcoms which have, you know, Bart Simpson or the South Park kids as the center of it,
but not live action.
They never have to grow up, they never have to change, they never have to evolve in any kind of way. And even when you have like a Home Improvement where there is a child,
they're not the center.
He's not the focus, he's not the center, he's not the comedic engine.
Yeah Oh my god,
so he doesn't have to Well, yeah, I mean, but he's, the child is not...
No.
Like, it's all about Tim, right?
Yeah.
And that was generally the case, where the comedic engine was always the parent, and the children were kind of caught in a time loop, in a, what's it called, in a sitcom loop, in the sense that they didn't really need to evolve for the benefit of the show in any kind of way. Whereas Malcolm, like, they grew up.
Yeah.
So they had to change. The Middle is the natural successor to Malcolm in the Middle as well, right?
Oh, where
you do have a... I mean, The Middle has a lot of commonalities with Malcolm in the Middle, right?
I know, but that's why I just found it really frustrating how close it was. It was like, again, with the taking the same format but not changing it enough.
It's a cover band, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which is, you know, people like cover bands. People go and see cover bands.
People do, yeah.
My dad's been to see, what is it? Steely Dan cover band a few times. Oh, there's loads. There's too many. There's too many. Pretzel Logic are a big one, but...
Yeah. Wait, there was something Steely I was going to say about. You asked a question.
Stealing in the Years.
What was the question you asked? If there was another one? Oh, yeah. Did you ever watch...
Oh, yeah.
Eight Simple Rules. It was Eight Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter or something like that.
Yes, with John Ritter, who died in the filming of it, and Kaylee Cuoco. Yeah. I mean, that must have been after Malcolm in the Middle, right? That was
after.
Early 2000s, I would have guessed.
Or around the same time.
And then David Spade came in later, right?
I didn't watch it after that.
Yeah, after John Ritter passed away, they tried to sort of like fill the gaps, and David Spade was one of the people I remember being in it. I did watch that show. I've forgotten everything about that show, but I did watch
that
show.
They did really well with how they wrote in the death.
It was devastating, wasn't it?
It was devastating, yeah.
Yeah,
because that's what happened. And I thought that was a really good way to approach it, rather than being like writing him out in any other way, just have that actually be what happened.
Yeah, he's like gone to... you know, the moon or whatever. He had to return to his home planet.
It seems so lucky. What's the word?
Tasteless?
Yeah.
Yeah. So are you excited for the revival of it?
I'm cautiously optimistic, I'd say.
Yeah.
If Bryan Cranston is involved, that gives me more hope. As well, Jane Kasmarek, the only other thing I'd seen her in was she plays the mum of Tobey Maguire and Reese Witherspoon in Pleasantville, where she plays pretty much Lois. It's a small role.
Okay.
But she does the same thing. I've never seen her in anything else.
We must have talked about this. You are a fan of King of the Hill, right? Have you seen the reboot?
No.
I just started watching it, and I mean, I love it.
Okay.
I'm surprised by how much I'm not, because I love King. I really love King of the Hill.
Yeah.
And I think, weirdly, it may even supersede everything else sitcoms-wise at this
point. I thought you meant the new one.
No. The original run of King of the Hill, sorry.
I was late to it. And I know this is obviously because I'm an editor, but the pacing is what makes it. It's so good, the way that they, like, when they decide to hold on something, and the fact that it's animated makes it so much funnier that you're just on Peggy when her eye is twitching for like 4 seconds.
talking about something which is human, it's still animated, so there is still a slight remove in the terms that you never really, and because you still have this stuck in time quality to it, things never really fully evolve in the way that they would do with like a Malcolm in the Middle. But yeah, it's surprisingly human and surprisingly slow and surprisingly for an animated show. Like, it does everything that you're not supposed to do with an animated show. You're supposed to use the animation to go to Crazyville all the time, and it never does that. Yeah, they're just going to Walmart work. Or whatever it's called. Megalomart.
Yeah.
Where they've got Chuck Mangione as the spokesperson. It's just
the one thing I guess that they do is the fact that his dad
Cotton
had his knees blown off, and so he's just missing his calves
after he killed Fiddy Man. Yeah. In fact, there's a reference to him in one of the in the new season. Bobby is running a German Japanese fusion restaurant.
Wait, so Bobby is older?
Bobby is older.
Interesting.
He's like 21.
Wow.
And Hank and Peggy have been to Saudi Arabia for the last like 5-10 years.
Oh, because he sells propane.
Because he's been working in the propane industry in Saudi Arabia. They've been living in this community, which is like a frozen in time community in Saudi Arabia. So they haven't dealt with the developments in the US in recent times. So they're coming back to a very different America in a lot of ways.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting setup, and they're now retired. Yeah. But he's running this Japanese-German restaurant. These people from this German cultural association come along, and one of them says, "Wait, you don't know Cotton Hill, do you?" And he says, "Yeah." He says, "He killed my grandfather." He's like, "Oh my God, was he one of the Fiddy Men?" The fact that they're doing that well with the original creatives involved, I mean, it looks like all the original creative team are involved with the new Malcolm reboot.
Yeah.
I have some hope.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely hopeful.
Yeah.
But you never know.
You never know.
I just watched the first episode of the new Mitchell and Webb sketch show.
Yeah. Any good? Nah.
I'd say it was like 20% better than I expected, and my expectations were low.
Right. Oh, okay.
So there were like two sketches that made me laugh.
Sure.
Then they repeated them.
Mm.
And one of them was literally just swearing, which is lazy.
Yeah.
Whatever you're imagining, it's exactly that.
Yeah, I just wonder sometimes if sketch as a form is just kind of a young person's form. Do you know what I mean? Like, I quite enjoyed one of David Mitchell's recent books.
Such a classic. King's and Queens one?
Yeah, I liked that. I think some of the long form stuff that they've done since the original run. I don't know, like sketch just feels to me to be, I've got all these ideas about all these different things, and I'm a young person. I just want to throw all this stuff out and test my range and test my limits. And it's so interesting when you see, like, the perfect example of this is Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie.
Oh,
where
yeah.
Hugh Laurie used to play the American cop in sketches, and Stephen Fry would play the scolding headmaster, and they both became that.
Yeah.
Right? Hugh Laurie went on to be House, and Stephen Fry is the headmaster of the UK.
Yeah.
And but like a lot of sketch performers, you do see those threads early in their, you know, they end up evolving into the thing that they were parodying to some extent early on, right?
I don't know if that was an original, but that really got me.
Yeah.
He's the headmaster of the UK.
Richard Osmond is the substitute
teacher. He is. You're right about sketch show, because Smack the Pony as well.
Oh, yeah.
It was brilliant. And then they went on to more kind of sitcom vibes.
Mm.
One of the sketches I liked in the Mitchell and Webb look, the new one, was, it's not called that as well, it's called something else. They use a device where they have, at the end of a sketch, a couple of times, they'll go into the writer's room.
Mm.
And that's another sketch about being in the writer's room.
Right, and arguing they used to do interstitials before, where they were sitting together in between takes, right?
Except now it's a room. So they have younger people in there, the other actors that they're working with.
Right.
Pulling apart a joke. And those bits were funny.
Okay.
But again, it's just not not enough.
Yeah, I mean, we'll revisit this when Malcolm comes out, right?
You sound hopeful.
Yeah, well, I mean, I am hopeful. I just, now you're saying about
reboots.
Very talented. It's a dodgy thing.
That said, we've just spent however long talking about how good Malcolm in the Middle is, the original. I don't think Mitchell and Webb look was ever that good.
No, again, and the nature of sketch, right? It's hit and miss.
Yeah.
And that's built into it, right? You remember the good sketches, you don't remember the sketches that sort of fell a bit flat and were padding, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah, when's it out, the new one?
New one is scheduled to come out in December.
Oh, amazing.
But only 4 episodes.
That's kind of a good sign, actually.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be based around some sort of family reunion or an event or something.
Yeah, because Malcolm's coming back with his wife and daughter or something.
Yeah, okay, yeah, girlfriend and daughter. Interesting. Oh, Craig's coming back as well. David Anthony Higgins.
Good. Love Craig.
Yeah, he was good. Yeah. Okay.
Like and subscribe.